Chapter 2. Lost in the In-Betweens. Everything hurt. Hazuma could feel blood dripping down her face, but had no way of knowing if it was her mother's, her own, or Parakasan's. The young greenette shone up to a sitting position as the realization of what had happened hit her like a ton of bricks as her eyes stared at the ruined concrete wall from behind the half-shattered lenses of her glasses.
Parakasan!
Her voice was shrill and coarse as she scrambled to her feet, stumbling her way towards the prone form of her mother's friend. The bone-deep panic and dread she felt had robbed the girl of all higher thought processes, and all she could do was pitifully grope and tug on the American woman's limp form.
Come on. Come on, please. You have to get up. I'm so excited. Everything's going to be okay after you beat this guy, right? Please wake up!
Hazuma wailed, grabbing the front of the woman's overalls, pathetically shaking her as tears trailed down her face, a side effect of her subconscious acknowledgement that she knew her pleading was ultimately futile. The sound of heavy footsteps and crumbling rubble behind her caused the girl's blood to run cold, and she shakily turned around as a shadow loomed over her. Rumbling laughter barked out from the villain's throat as the rhino-like mutant casually stepped through the crumbled remains of the wall.
Seems like breaking female was easier than expected, the Russian mused, grabbing the girl's bloody, dirt-coated uniform and easily hefting it up, either willfully ignorant or totally oblivious to Hazumu's feeble kicks against his thick hide.
Ah, this is bad news for you, girlie. Spider bitch was meant to suffer, and now that she is dead, she cannot. I suppose you will be fitting substitute,
he callously exclaimed, smiling murderously as he yanked the girl's form away from the fallen hero's body, hauling her deeper into the metro tunnel. His rumbling laughter merely got louder as she fruitlessly banged her fists against him. The sound of something being torn from a metal casing caused her to stop and stare open-mouthed. The fear in her emerald eyes was hidden by the hissing electrical arc coming from the thick cable that the mutant had wrenched from its housing in the tracks.
Don't blame me for this. It's Spider Bitch's fault, after all.
The pain that came next was unbearable. Her vision blurred heavily, and what little bit of her mind that could still think about anything other than the thousands of knives blooming under the skin of her neck and shoulder was vaguely confused by the smell of frying pork. She just wanted it to stop. Dear God, why is it that she has to go through this? She just wanted it to stop. She gasped heavily when the cable was pulled away from her shoulder. The massive Russian man howled in laughter as Hazumu panted, breath gasping and ragged in the dusty air of the metro. Her unfocused emerald eyes drifted towards the live wire clutched in the taunting mutant's hands, the words he spoke drifting out of her consciousness like sand leaking out of a broken hourglass. The feeling of the wire jammed into her cheek, bringing with it the sensation of knives crawling underneath her skin as her vision went white. She didn't even notice that the screaming was coming from her. Hitoshi was kicking himself as he pulled himself from the debris he had been hiding behind.
Why the fuck are you even doing this? This is how you get yourself killed.
The quick scramble from his hiding place to the edge of the railway platform only led him closer to the screaming that morbidly held his focus. He just couldn't bring himself to run somewhere when it was obvious that either that vigilante or the girl she had tried to save was being tortured from the sound of it. The wiry-haired insomniac grunted softly as he landed in the rail-lined pit, taking care to leap over all the rails and wires in one fell swoop. As he turned and peeked from a hiding spot behind a train car, he nearly gagged with the sickly sweet burning smell in the air. The massive mountain of a mutant was gleefully jamming an arcing electric cable to the cheek of the screaming girl from earlier. The fact that the woman that had been fighting him earlier was nowhere to be found caused a panicked fear to take hold in his throat. Something had to be done. That bastard would kill that kid if nobody stopped him. Where were the goddamn heroes? He felt himself stepping out from his hiding spot with a piece of hard gravel scooped from the dirt in his hand. He flung the stone as hard as he could, his hitched yell piercing past the girl's pained screams.
Hey! Hey, asshole! Go and pick on someone your own size, you ugly motherfucker!
The monstrous man dropped the cable and growled, turning to look at the scared, purple-haired teenager.
The fuck
Hitoshi clamped down on the man's mind in a vice grip, straining as hard as he could to encompass the villain's mind in his quirk.
Put the girl down, and go surrender yourself to the heroes.
The rhinoceros man mindlessly tossed the girl to the side and began stomping mechanically away, his large beady eyes glazed over with the effects of the boy's quirk. Hitoshi let the breath he didn't know he had been holding fall from his lips before he swore and rushed to the girl's side. Her eyes were open and she was groaning, but she was breathing, and that was bloody fantastic in Hitoshi's mind. The rumble of the metro station caused debris to fall from the ceiling, bits of stone and plaster plinking down on the two of them, causing the lanky teen to swear lightly.
This is going to be pleasant, but I don't think we can stay in a collapsing station.
Hitoshi pulled the mumbling, half-conscious girl to his shoulder, doing his best to avoid her injured side. His eyes lingered on the warped-looking burn with a sort of heavy guilt, like his consciousness was growling at him that he could have done more to stop him.
Come on, kiddo.
The boy slipped her arm over his shoulders and lifted her weight onto his own.
Stay with me. I hear dying's pretty bad for your health.
He started making his way towards the exits. The girl's wounds and some of the blood stains he passed a grim reminder of what had happened today. He needed to get her to a paramedic fast, but it was always good to keep a smile on someone's face.
Anyone ever tell you that you weigh as much as a sack of wet kittens?
The soft, pained giggle he heard escape her lips made it worth it, but what he heard next from her caused him to pause.
You're a great hero. Well, shit.
Hitoshi kept up his pace as the girl leaned against him. The soft noises of the hospital beeped in the green-haired girl's ears. She hated it. She wanted to be anywhere else but here. She knew that Auntie Mitsuki was somewhere down the hall, probably getting a coffee or a snack or something to stave off the depressive episode that Hazuma could see in her eyes. After all, she had been in the room when the doctor had told them both that the Bakugos were listed as the next of kin in the event that both Inko and Patricia Parka were otherwise unable to take care of her. This also brought the thought of living in the same house as Katsuki, even if Auntie Mitsuki and Uncle Masaru were kind and supportive, caused her throat to burn with a condensed panic. Hazuma stared at the door. Her vision swam tiredly, half blocked by the heavy gauze bandage covering the right side of her face. But she couldn't bring herself to go back to sleep. If it wasn't the visions of her mother and Parka-san that had woken her, it was this odd tingling sensation, like every nerve ending was awake and waiting for something to happen. She hoped that wasn't a side effect of the concussion. The girl groaned softly as she rolled out of her hospital bed, falling to the cold floor for momentary relief from the fact that it felt like her body was on fire. The hospital clothing felt stiff and damp as she felt her skin crawl all over. The young greenette shakily got to her feet and rushed to the window, opening it for the relief of the cold night air. She leaned forward, panting as her vision blurred, her cracked glasses sliding down her nose. The girl shook gently and clenched the edge of the windowsill. Her body retched as she vomited out what little food that Auntie Mitsuki and the nurses had actually managed to coax down her throat. The splat a few stories down on the street below would have been comical if she wasn't trying to catch her breath and clenching her grip on the edge as she doubled over, a pain racking her body. Blinking slightly, she felt a thud. When her eyes opened, she was lying a few inches away from the acrid-smelling puddle of bile. The girl retched again, the smell vile in her throat, as she groaned and scrambled away. Hazuma's vision blurred in the chilly night air. Her head pounded heavily and her vision was shaken save for a few feet in front of her. She could barely stand, let alone think. She wiped her pants and a few pebbles of brick and mortar fell away. She needed to get home. Her head was pounding and Mom would know what to do. The tiny girl stumbled out into the street, leaving the open window and the 5-inch-deep grooves in the building's outer wall. That and a puddle of vomit as the only and very confusing clues of where she had gone. Hazuma was trying to find home, but she just couldn't. Her head swam and her vision blurred with each step she took. Was the city always this loud at night? She swore each vehicle that rambled by sounded bass-boosted, and there was someone arguing out of what sounded like a pachinko parlor, and for the love of God, it seemed like every few steps, a pigeon would coo right behind her ear, and every time she stopped to turn, it just wasn't there. She was exhausted, and her skin felt like it was crawling under her bandages. Every time she passed someone, they would stare for a moment before quickly forcing their gaze back to the ground.
"Are they scared of me?"
She stumbled softly, letting herself fall to the ground. The cool dirt she found herself laying in felt like heaven on her fever-addled form.
"Don't know why they'd be scared. I'm just some quirkless Deku. Maybe the pigeons will go away if I sleep."
Her eyes drifted closed gently, her consciousness melting away into what felt like cobwebs and soft, familial worry. Hitoshi sighed softly as he slipped into the turn next to the old abandoned Mustafa Community Center. He had managed to slip most of his stuff out of the house, his parents not giving a shit it paid out, really. They had taken a surprise trip to Korea with no more notice than finding a note telling him not to fuck anything up, and Fluffy locked in his cat carrier. That detail burned him up inside. The fact that if he hadn't come back from that villain attack alive, Fluffy could have starved alone, and nobody would have cared. That was the straw that finally got him pulling his things out to one of the empty but usable buildings he had scouted out. And at last, the final bits were his laptop and most of Fluffy's things. The fat, raw turkey, poorly disguised as a sphinx cat, meowed regally from his carrier.
"Meow."
"Yes, Fluffy, how observant you are, a pest."
"Meow."
"And here lies Hitoshi, running away from home, having an argument with his cat. I'm losing control of my life." Was he kidding? He never had control to begin with.
The purple-haired teen just sighed as he stepped past a round, lumpy something on the ground next to the place he had decided to squat at. He stared at the massive silk cocoon. The cocoon did nothing back. Hitoshi didn't even realize he had dropped Fluffy's cat carrier until he absentmindedly watched the cat clamber up the grayish-green silky mound and start making donuts.
"Just what the hell do you think you're doing, Fluffy?"
The cat ceased his smushing of the large, lumpy-looking silk object and blinked slowly, one eye behind the other, then promptly spun in a circle and laid down in a curl on top of the cocoon. Hitoshi steepled his fingers under his nose. He heaved a massive sigh of exasperation as he popped a squat and stared at the large, grayish-green object.
"Fuck."
He let out in a long hiss as he tried to figure out at exactly what station he had gotten off of the train to Crazy Town. What the hell even makes a cocoon this big? That's gonna be one giant fuck-off cicada. The boy sat down and pulled his laptop out of his messenger bag, plugging it into the outdoors outlet nearby.
"Might as well watch what pops out. If it eats me, I die as I live, disgruntled, tired and causing someone else stomach problems."
Hazumu felt different. Like she was drifting by on something warm and soft. The slight limbo between rest and wakefulness still weighed heavily on her consciousness. Something was changing, and she couldn't quite put a mental finger on it. Her thoughts would drift and shiver by too quick for her to register, drifting amongst the sounds of cracks and the feeling of change. Her eyes opened to a dark room, though the first thing that registered in her mind was how odd everything was. There had been a sense of unease, a soft sort of uncanny wrongness that she had lived with for as long as she could remember, that was slipping away. And frankly, with each moment, she felt more at ease with herself, the comfort almost enough to dull the lurking pain from what she had witnessed the day before. Voices rang through her dreams, causing her thoughts to swim as they spoke in unison. A swift feeling of home flooded through Hazuma's mind. Then the young girl found herself in the epicenter of the largest web she had ever seen. As Hazumu looked up, she stood before her.
"Patricia's circumstances could have been better, but this girl is a fine home for our web. After how she has suffered, the web shall gift you, child."
She donned a cloak made of night, obscuring her matronly form. 8 grand spider legs extruded from behind her, wrapping around the lithe woman and walking her forward, slowly. Lightning crackled above, and a flash of light caught her face, giving Hazamu a glimpse. Ancient and knowing, a woman well into her silver years, stern-looking but thick laugh lines on her cheeks. Another flash and another glimpse. A young woman, barely older than Hazamu was herself, dark-skinned and with a jovial smile. Flash. She saw a quick flash of long green hair before the lightning came again. This time a face that was familiar to her. Parkasan. Every last face was smiling. And then she heard a voice. A single voice made up of so much. The voices to match the faces she saw, made of spiders clacking their teeth and picking at their webs. And like that, she awoke. Hitoshi grumbled softly. The thermos of coffee in his hands was a lifeline in the early morning cold.
Morning, Fluffy. Morning, weird-ass cocoon thing.
He took a sip and just contemplated the large silk cocoon that had been his cat's chosen perch for the 2.5 weeks he had been living at the unused community center. Hell, the thing was starting to look downright at home here at this point. And if it wasn't for the odd movement and strange noise that emitted from it every now and again, Hitoshi would have assumed it was just an abandoned Halloween decoration. After all, this particular civic center did throw some downright creepy haunted houses in the past, if he remembered his childhood right. What the purple-eyed insomniac hadn't expected was the excited trills from his cat as the silky mound started to pulsate. For a few moments, he watched in abject horror, the thermos of coffee rolling down the stairs with a soft, sloshing tink. She took a massive breath as she pawed at the thickness covering her, finding an edge she pulled. Confused by the tearing sound, she felt whatever she was in deflate. The young girl felt odd. Not necessarily bad, just different. Though she did notice the purple-haired boy holding a thermos threateningly in her direction, a rather fat and hairless cat struggling to get out of his hand.
Okay. I gotta be dreaming this, because there is no way the orb-looking cocoon thing outside my house has had a girl in it this entire time.
The familiar-looking boy shook the metal thermos and was talking more at her than to her. The metallic tinkle of the thermos felt like a gong going off in her head, and the high morning sun caused her to have to squint and glare like she had forgotten her glasses somewhere.
That thermos doesn't have, like, a rocket launcher or something in it, does it? Because it's rattling like a discount action movie gun. Why did everything just feel loud?
It was honestly giving her a slight headache. Though one good change was that her talking finally made the boy realize she existed like a normal human being, which promptly caused him to blush a bright pink and avert his eyes. Now, this caused her own freckle to light up as well.
Go inside! Fucking bathrooms are down the hall and to the left! I'll find you something to wear!
The boy scrambled away, holding his still squirming cat. Hazuma flinched softly at the jarring yell from the boy. It didn't quite hurt her ears, more just caused her brain to start processing white noise. It had been quite some time since she had gone through a sensory overload episode, and the prospect of going through one naked and in a strange place wasn't stacking up to be a fun experience. Hazuma was shaking as she stared into the cracked bathroom mirror. So much had changed from how she remembered looking before she stumbled away from her hospital room. The electrical burns from the events of the train station attack looked to have healed completely, even if the scar that ran in lightning spirals from her forehead to the left side of her face caused a feeling of unease in the lower pit of her stomach. As she touched her cheek and gawked, she realized something major was different. The pair of eyes that were staring back at her were soft, though she jumped slightly at the sight of her missing irises. Verdant, fully emerald orbs that glowed slightly in the dim light of the bathroom certainly weren't the eyes she had been born with. As she looked down at her body, she sputtered slightly, and a blushing and quick check had red rising up her face as she clenched her eyes shut.
Going into a more thorough check would be too much right now.
The green-haired girl bit her bottom lip and bounced slightly on the balls of her feet, trying to clear the confusion and white noise that threatened the edges of her mind. The girl didn't know what to do with herself, really, and the thought made her chuckle softly at the irony she was feeling at the situation. She could think of the days where she had fallen asleep praying to any god, deity, spirit, or devil that would answer her, to ask for the wish of being able to wake up as a girl with a quirk. The fact that it only took the... She clamped down on that sort of thinking, feeling stinging tears start to burn at the corner of her vision. A tingle at the back of her neck caused her to jump a second time, milliseconds before a knock came from the bathroom door. The green-eyed girl turns to hear a voice.
Hey, these clothes are gonna be big on you because evidently I'm a tall motherfucker, but they ought to work out fine until you can head home.
I don't have a home to get to. The sharp intake of breath from the other side of the door made her realize she had mumbled that out loud. The young girl bit her bottom lip, reaching an arm around the door to grab the clothes that were quickly deposited into her hand. Shit, if you want to talk or something, I'll be in the office around the corner. I don't mind if you hang around for a bit while you figure out where you're going to go. Hosmo sighed softly as she listened to the tall boy walk away from her. She slipped into the clothing quickly. They were sort of plain in the grand scheme of things. She had to pull the strings on the shorts as tight as they would go to get them to stay up, even double-knotting them to be sure. The shirt made her chuckle, a simple and cheap gray t-shirt that had the words "dress shirt" written in kanji, even with the new additions on her chest that she was still trying to ignore for the sake of posterity. The shirt hung off of her like a dress. As she stared at herself in the mirror, she felt a soft ache in her heart. She remembered overhearing hushed conversations from some of the girls at school about wearing outfits like this after not-so-secret rendezvous with their significant others. The fact that it had been denied her for so long, and she finally had it now, just felt surreal. Hosmo walked the short distance to what seemed like some offices in the abandoned but still mostly furnished civic center. Hi. She peeked around the doorway and waved. The office looked rather homey. In one corner was a massive desk with multiple monitors and a sort of camera-slash-recording setup, and on the walls were a few posters, with the centerpieces of the room being a folded western-style futon and an absolutely massive cat bed. That had the fat, hairless cat from before laying belly up in it. He lazily flitted his ears and honked, as if it was a travesty that everyone in the room wasn't paying attention to him right this instant.
Shut up, Fluffy, the grown-ups are talking.
The purple-haired boy turned his desk chair around and smiled.
But anyway, the name's Satoshi. Don't have much use for a family name, since they're a bunch of dickholes anyways, you?
Midoriya? Midoriya Hosmo, thank you for taking care of me. The short greenette bowed heavily. Hitoshi waved a hand and rubbed the back of his neck. The tired-looking boy smiled lightly. Not every day I watch an alien crawl out of an egg in my front lawn. This caused the girl to sputter into laughter.
I'm not an alien, though to be fair, I never thought I had a quirk either.
If is about all that Hitoshi could think to that. The girl stared a moment before giggling again.
Has anyone ever told you that you're funny?
He scoffed and rolled his eyes. Absolutely not. I mean, look at me, I live in a dusty old civic center with the only source of conversation being a cat that's too damn fat for his own good. At the word cat, the sphinx at the center of the room honked loudly again, as if he took offense to the statement.
So, how do I say this without sounding creepy? You can stay here if you want. I don't mind sharing, and it looks kind of obvious that you need a place to stay. I mean, if you don't mind squatting in an old public works building with a homeless guy and the fattest, hairless cat that currently exists.
You know, Hosmo looked at the boy and smiled. He had been nice to her. He hadn't called her names, hadn't been a quirkish, transphobic bastard like Bakugo or any of the people in her old class. As the girl hid the soft feeling of hurt that burned in the pit of her stomach as her mind strayed back to memories of Auntie Mitsuki and Uncle Masaru. Then, by extension, her own mother.
I think I'll take you up on that.